Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
I wish we could stop that.
I know.
Oh man, so many things. Well, this life is wild, that's for sure. And I think the only reason that I only even know that for a tiny bit is through meditation. Because when I say the word life, I mean this inner life and this outer life, the whole life. When I used to say that life sucked or life was crazy, it was always the outside life that I was pointing at. Because life never fit my situation, the conditions never fit it the way that I wanted it to. And through this practice, that has drastically changed, you know. And maybe even something before this practice, this real willingness to look showed up in my life. And from that place, I just became willing to try all kinds of weird stuff. All kinds of weird stuff. And that continues. That continues in my life. And I guess when I say weird stuff, I mean things that I would never do in the past, you know, put myself in awkward situations, make myself do difficult things, you know, show up to life in a new way. And the byproduct of that is you get to see things that were never available before. Out of reach. So tonight I wanted to talk a bit about, and we're only going to talk a bit about it because it's such a crazy teaching of Buddhism called the Abhidharma, which is some of the earliest texts from the Pali Canon. And this became a huge school of Buddhism. And when you read a little bit about, we're not going to read too much about the Abhidharma, but we're going to read about the 30 verses, which was written later. And but when you start to go through it, it's this like mathematical equation of exactly how we come into consciousness, how we get lost, and then we have the ability to come into this enlightenment stage. But when you start to kind of encounter the Abhidharma, it is so complex, it is so sophisticated that anytime I read it, I can only take in little pieces of it. And that's all right. There was a 5th century Buddhist monk named Vasubandhu, and he wrote the Yogacara, which is also translated as the 30 verses. And it's a comprised image of the Abhidharma, which he tried to write it from a layman's place that mortals could kind of understand it because of how in depth and how complicated it is. I say that jokingly. I mean, obviously, the Abhidharma is open to everybody. So he wrote this wonderful teaching called the Yogacara. And I'm going to read the 30 verses. It's kind of long, so I think it's important at least to kind of see how immense and how complex it is, but also there's certain parts of it that are very relatable to our life, you know, and that's important for us to know. So I'm going to start by reading the 30 verses and kind of go from there. This is the 30 verses on consciousness only. Everything conceived as self or other occurs in the transformation of consciousness. This transformation has three aspects: the ripening of karma, the consciousness of a self, and the imagery of sense objects. The first of these is also called alaya, the store consciousness, which contains all karmic seeds. What it holds and its perception of location are unknown. It is always associated with sense contact, attention, sensation, perception, and volition, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It is unobstructed and karmically neutral like a river flowing. In enlightenment, it is overturned at its root. Dependent on the store consciousness and taking it as its object, manas, the consciousness of a self arises, which consists of thinking. It is always associated with four afflictions: self-view, self-delusion, self-pride, and self-love, and is obstructed but karmically neutral along with these four. From where it is born comes sense contact, attention, sensation, perception, and volition. It is not found in enlightenment, the meditation of cessation, or the supramundane path. That is the second transformation. The third is the perception of the six senses, which are beneficial, harmful, or neither. It is associated with three kinds of mental factors: universal, specific, and beneficial, as well as the afflictions and secondary afflictions and the three sensations. The universal factors are sense contact, attention, sensation, perception, and volition. The specific are aspiration, resolve, memory, concentration, and intellection. The beneficial factors are faith, conscience, humility, lack of desire, aversion, and delusion, energy, tranquility, carefulness, equanimity, and nonviolence. The afflictions are desire, aversion, delusion, pride, wrong view, and doubt. The secondary afflictions are anger, hatred, hypocrisy, malice, envy, selfishness, deceitfulness, guile, arrogance, harmfulness, lack of conscience and humility, sluggishness, restlessness, lack of faith, laziness, carelessness, forgetfulness, distraction, and unawareness. Remorse, sleepiness, and initial thought and analysis can be either afflictive or not. The five sense consciousness arise on the root consciousness together or separately, depending on conditions, like waves arise on water. Thought consciousness always manifests except in the realm of no thought. The two thought-free meditation states are unconsciousness and thought-free sleep. This transformation of consciousness is conceptualization. What is conceptualized does not exist, thus everything is projection only. Consciousness is all the seeds transforming in various ways, through mutual influence producing the many conceptualizations. Karmic impressions and the impressions of grasping self and other produce further ripening as the former karmic effect is exhausted. Whatever thing is conceptualized by whatever conceptualization is of an imaginary nature, it does not exist. The other dependent nature is a conceptualization arising from conditions. The complete, realized nature is the other dependent nature's always being devoid of the imaginary. Thus, it is neither the same nor different from the other dependent, like impermanence, etc. When one isn't seen, the other also is not seen. With the threefold nature is a threefold absence of self-nature. So it has been taught that all things have no self. The imaginary is without self by definition. The other dependent does not exist by itself. The third is no self-nature, that is, the complete realized nature of all phenomena, which is thusness. Since it is always already thus, projection only. As long as consciousness does not rest in projection only, the tendencies of grasping self and others will not cease. By conceiving what you put before you to be projection only, you do not rest in just this. When consciousness does not perceive any object, then it rests in projection only. When there is nothing to grasp, there is no grasping. Without thought, without conception, this is the supramundane awareness, the overturning of the root, the ending of the two barriers. It is the inconceivable, wholesome, unstained, constant realm, the blissful body of liberation, the Dharma body of the great sage. So it's a very intense teaching. So I started reading this book and I started really studying it, to the point where I started memorizing these every morning, and chanting them each morning. I didn't quite memorize the whole thing as of yet, but I've gotten a piece of it. And as I've done that, the pieces all kind of come together. It's almost like if you pick up an ear of corn, you just see an ear of corn, right? But if you look closer, you start to see all the individual kernels. If you just stop there, we're just looking at all the parts of ourself. If I go further and I look at where this came from, the stalk, the earth that it was connected to, the sun and the winds and the water and all these things, then we start to see the real picture of the ear of corn. It's not just this thing I'm going to eat and slather with butter, you know, that kind of idea. And so the Yogacara was really a way of getting to the very core of what we are and how we've missed that, you know, and how to come back to it, really how to come back to this, this liberation. And this all goes in line with the Buddha's Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and all this. And so this was just the Abhidharma's way of almost like cataloging all of these crazy afflictions that we have, all of these aspects of what we think we are in comparison to what we really are, you know. And so half of this, the beginning half of those 30 verses deals with all of the it deals with all of the afflictions, and it deals with all of the illusions and the senses. And then the second half of it deals with this process of moving out of them. So it's this whole crazy thing. And very much like a lot of old Buddhist texts, it takes a lot of practice to understand it. I mean, just the language of it itself is really difficult, you know. So I had to study what the words were. I had to understand what karma was. I had to understand, you know. So it's this whole crazy process that we have to go through. And which, you know, one of my favorite teachers says Buddhism is very sophisticated. It's very workable, but at its depths, it's very sophisticated. You know, it's almost like when you think of these forests where all the root system is interconnected, You know, it's a very sophisticated life form. You just see one tree, but the whole thing is this living thing, you know? And this is what the second to the last verse is about. It is the ending of these two barriers, you know? And part of that is self and other. It's we end that barrier. And he says it in this way. He says, it is the ending of the afflictive emotions and our delusions, are like our psychopathic emotions. That's pretty wild. So there's a little bit of the Abhidharma that I would like to share with you, because I think it's really, it's, sometimes it's so, there's so much to these, you know, and we talk about this, the monks and I, we talk about this, about, you know, sometimes these Wednesday night teachings, there's so much. And anybody that remembers sitting with Roshi, it would be so much that he would offer up. And you walk out of there feeling like a dummy, like, you know, I can't remember anything. And Thubten Yeshe, Lama Thubten Yeshe, he says, even if you have one little kernel from that ear of corn, that's enough. That's okay. That's perfect, you know. And it's so true. If you can just grab one little piece, even if it has nothing to do with the teaching, if you notice something in meditation, if you had that moment of like everything fell away, that's great. That's wild, you know. That's enough. So when the Abhidharma listed all this, they had 75 dharmas. They named them dharmas that they listed. And it goes into this wild way that they catalog this breakdown from the senses, the mind, into the mental factors, into the elements of neither substantial forms nor mental functions, into the unconditioned. Like, they really, these guys really did insane work. And the problem with that whole list is it will never make sense intellectually. Mm-hmm. That's the crazy, that's the aspect of it. It will never make sense intellectually. And this is where meditation becomes the vehicle for that opening, for that door to open, because otherwise there's too much stuff mixed up with this pure nature that we have. So I thought this was a great aspect of why it's important to look, and to look deeply. He says, how is it possible, being so dominated by this pattern involving the self, that it can be blasted apart either analytically or meditatively? There is a word that's given to indicate how it is possible to discern and then cut through this self. It is prajna, wisdom. Prajna is said to be that factor, that basic aspect of being human, which allows us to discern and discover how those habitual patterns of our life actually work. The habitual patterns of our life actually work. The mechanism. We might say that when we experience a sense of permanence, when we suffer this fixity of being a self, our prajna is a bit sleepy. It's there, but it's a bit sleepy. And when we begin to wake up, it is this factor of prajna that helps us wake up. Prajna allows us to blast through this sense of self, the cause of our sufferings. We should be clear that this sense of a self is not some minor aspect of life, of our life, but rather a term for the tight, crowded, confused, and anxious patterns which make up my life. To put it a different way, I have to say, I have a problem. Wait, let me read that again. To put it a different way, to say, I have a problem, is tautological or needless. He uses big words too. I have a problem is needless. The sense of that I is a problem already because I is the name given to that tight pattern. It fosters painful, habitual clingings. It makes it possible for cravings to have or to not have things arise. If I have something I like, I don't call it a problem. But even if we have something we are afraid of, but even if we have something, we are afraid of our separation from it. We don't want to be separated from the stuff we like, and we don't want to be connected to the stuff we don't like. Prior to that, there is already a tight difference, a holding pattern, and that's called self. The good news is that this can be cut and blasted through. The bad news is that it's not necessarily quick or easy. There are very precise techniques, both meditative and analytical, for breaking through or making more spacious this tight pattern called self. This tight pattern. And it's in that kind of talk, it's in that kind of definition that it moves from the I, it moves from me. And he refers to it as a tight pattern, you know? Where it's almost like the self is this, like, it's a leech almost, you know? And so it's constantly leeching all of this life force of us. And anyone can see this. All you have to do is sit for a moment and start to bring up lousy feelings. And you will start to feel it in your whole body. You will become drowsy. You will become tight. You will become agitated, maybe angry. And it's the same exact thing when we bring about these, and not from a fake place, but from when we really remember gratitude. When I really dive into the people that I love, you know, it brings about an elated feeling. It brings about something wonderful. But just as the writer said here, we even have to be careful with that, because the one we want to push away and the other one I want to cling to. I want more of that, you know. So how do we find this amazing balance? Because this is, to me, this is the whole Buddhist path. And that's why the Buddha called it this middle way, you know. I want to find a way to walk this kind of fine line. Because sometimes it's like a tight wire, you know. It's like a tight rope. And other times it's like a giant highway. And there's no cars on it at all. It's just this big, roomy place, you know. So for this practice to really come to fruition, it takes the meditation. It takes the analytical. It takes the intellectual. It takes the actualizing of these, you know. To actualize is to make real, to make something real. So the other day, yesterday was my it would have been my mom's 83rd birthday, and so I made a little commitment to myself. I was going to do a fast, so I started a fast yesterday for 5 days. I'll quit. I'll stop that on Sunday. And I don't like it. I don't love fasting. And I love food. And so I enter into these crazy practices because I would have never seen it from another angle before. I would have never experienced what it's like to feel hungry, but know that I don't need to eat. You know, to feel the effects on the human body when food is taken away from it. It's kind of the same thing when sleep is taken away. You know, the body reacts to it. You know? And with awareness, I can simply watch this happen. In meditation, all of a sudden my head just like shot this way, and I was like, whoa, just, you know, I had nothing to do with it. It just was a complete reaction that happened. And so for me, I think that's why Buddhism is not only very pragmatic, which means that it's very workable, it's very understandable, but it's very complex. Because these sages and these Buddhas and these teachers know just how complex this ego mind is, you know. So for us to find out how that is, we have to dig into what it is. And I just wanted to share this other little reading here. Just as the ocean encounters the condition of wind and produces many waves, but rolls on uninterrupted, so it is with the ocean of Alaya, battered by the wind of objects and perpetually producing the waves of various consciousnesses, rolling on uninterrupted, just as it is. And so this small poem and the small prayer is this, he's pointing at the nature of things is just this wave after wave after wave after wave. And when we fall into the mind is no different. It's just a thought after a thought after a thought. And if we're able to step out of that clinging or that pushing away, we get to really start to watch this mind just roll out its waves. And if you're not afraid of those waves, if you're not affected by those waves, it's just a wave. You might actually see the beauty in it. You might see the beauty in a crazy thought that you have and just start laughing. Just laugh out loud. You know? And not from that place like, why did I think that? Who cares why? You know, it's okay, this kind of idea. But I think we have to get to a place where we can see it like that. Shunryu Suzuki uses a metaphor of a movie and a screen to beautifully relate the idea that the five senses arise on the root consciousness. What we take to be reality is like a movie, but we are generally unaware that there is a screen. He says, if you want to enjoy the movie, you should know that it is the combination of film and light and white screen. And that the most important thing is to have a plain white screen. If your screen is smudged, the movie will be colored as well. And this is the point of what we really practice. This stepping into oneself to really investigate what is happening. And when we do that, we start to see where we're stuck. We start to see our afflictions. And then the rest of the path shows us the way of stepping out of that. It's like the Thich Nhat Hanh says, our greatest possessions are our actions. And when my actions are closest to these teachings, well, then the result is joy. The result is peace, you know. I think it's really neat. I was talking with somebody this morning about this. Like, you know, we have those two voices. We got the good voice and the bad voice, you know, and they're always kind of in conflict. But there's also another voice in there. You also have the referee, you know, and the referee is going, oh, you be now, oh, you stop doing it. And it's kind of like... When we start to take notice of this, this is all the waves of the mind. And I've just put different faces and voices to each one of those waves. And it's really important to see this, because if we don't see it, there is no solution from it, you know. The thoughts are just thoughts. Feelings are feelings. They're connected to certain things, certain aspects. Like the Yogacara says, these feelings and initial thought can either be afflictive or not. They can be either afflictive or beneficial. And to grow through that whole practice. So, without going into too much of the technical aspect of this, because it's so easy to get lost. For me, it comes down to, if I am willing to look, the path is already there. It's already laid out. And in our time and in our lives today, we have so many opportunities to engage the Dharma. I always think about these teachers that were around in the 20s and 30s, even though there was only a few of them, but like they had nothing. There was no libraries full of Buddhist, you know. I mean, if there was, you had to go to the East to find it. And then even the guys hundreds and thousands of years ago, they learned it the old-fashioned way by sitting in caves or sitting in the mountains. And prajna woke up. You know, we create this space for prajna to wake up. And prajna begins to really show us the truth rather than trying to figure it out here. I got too many voices here.